There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 901, August 30th, 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say a wild Belgian waffle over the weekend at Spa. Russell on podium means Bottas is out of porridge.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, why was Spa not postponed? Was this worse than 2005? Should Massey be replaced? And of course, this week, Cafe Luna is our sponsor for the month of August. They're in beautiful downtown Carmel in the Carmel Plaza, the best ramen on the West Coast. And I just want to remind all the listeners that we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, Mr. Rogers, I'm doing okay. Thank you. But, you know, as Mr. Andy Williams would say, where do I begin to tell the sweet love story that was Spa on Sunday? You are the host with the most, so let's get your two French francs on this before we move on.
Well, I mean, I was blown away. First of all, this is my favorite race of the entire season. So I got up at 5 to see the pre-race. Because I'm all pumped up. I mean, this is Spa-Francorchamps. This is what I live for. And sure, a little rain delay, I can dig it. I mean, I'm ready. I'm thinking Donington 93. I'm ready to go. And it goes on. And qualifying was fascinating. It was beautiful. Oh my goodness, so exciting. So I'm thinking, man, this is going to be mixing it up. I'm loving it. We still got LCH in the top three. We got Russell on the front row. I'm going, man, we need maybe a new winner. I'm all excited. I'm thinking this is going to be a fantastic race in the rain. But Mr. Massey seems to be very fuzzy-headed, and we've had some issues with this FIA leader before, and this one was a doozy. I have to admit, a lot of Americans go NASCAR, they just postpone it till Monday. IndyCar, well, they can postpone it till Monday. And I know we had the Netherlands coming up the following weekend. So everybody was in a big hurry to do absolutely nothing. And the farcical two laps, I'm afraid I'm with LCH and everybody else. And LCH, boy, he's pissing a lot of people off because he's back to cash is king. And he blamed the entire world and the way it's structured around money for the debacle. But hey, all I say was postpone it. Come back. We have problems with canceled tracks. We can come back to Spa. The doors are open. But no, Massey had to do this, I don't know, this half points thing, which I think is going to change with the two laps in. It was terrible. I feel bad for anybody who wanted a race. It looked like Max Verstappen said, let's go, baby. Let's go, baby. But I understand the spray off the rear wheels is tremendous. So I'm thinking in my garage, you know, I'm got the TV on, I'm polishing the Citroën, and I'm thinking, well, why don't they have some rear fenders? They could just slap on very lightweight carbon fiber fenders on the rear wheels. And then, boom, all that splash gets taken down to the ground. There are solutions to be had, but yet nobody could find one. And that's my two cents, Nasser.
Very well said, sir. You know, Spa is everybody's favorite, and there are three Formula One races I look forward to each season. Actually, I wait for these races. Numero uno will always be Parco Monza. I cannot even tell you the feelings that go through me, the lightning I feel when the cars are on the back straight on the opening lap heading towards Parabolica, especially when the leader makes a direction change and everybody follows him. That is a very, very beautiful and a powerful feeling I experience every September. And we have Suzuka, unfortunately, off the calendar this season. And how sad it is. You know, Honda's last season and no Japanese Grand Prix. And then, of course, we have the Motorsports Garden of Eden, Spa-Francorchamps. And I'm going to tell you, Mr. Rogers, I was watching the Porsche Super Cup race, which takes place about 2 hours or something like that before the Grand Prix. I mean, we saw how Saturday was. And the Super Cup race, it was looking dark and gloomy. And that was my first concern about the race. And I was not thinking of what happened, but I was thinking like, we may have a mixed up result. And I had the same thought you had. We may have a new winner, and that would be very good for motorsports. But you know, when all was said and done, well, let's say it this way, all was said and not done, nothing done. All drivers agree conditions were not safe for racing. Because in racing, just like flying, safety has to be job number one for those on board. And as much as we all are disappointed in not seeing a race at Spa, I think for once, all racing fans will agree we don't need another Suzuka 2014. But you know, not much Mike Massey can do when it is raining cats and dogs. You remember when they were playing the World Series San Francisco in 1989? And then the earthquake came, say Major League Baseball cannot control earthquakes and Formula One management cannot control heavy rains. And now, but I have to say the whole affair, canceling the race, not holding the race, I mean all the drivers are saying everybody agrees it's not the thing to do. But the whole affair, the way it was handled was not the very best or high level of professionalism you would expect at such a major event. And now Mike Massey is facing incoming sidewinders and exhaust from all sides. We look forward to F1 Weekly Familiar member Louis Jensen from Netherlands, who was at the Belgian Grand Prix, and hopefully he will send us a audio report and some photographs so we can share with other family members. And like you said, you know, the original start, the pole man, Mr. Max, wanted to start the race and might not have been a bad idea, but I'm pretty sure within a few laps there would have been harum scarum. And some of us do remember Spa 1998. This weekend was much in line with weekends at Fuji in 1976 and 2007 in terms of heavy rain. Now, some people are claiming there was more rain in Portugal 1985 and what you just mentioned earlier, Donington 1993. That may be true. But location of Spa in the Arden Forest, trees all around, high-speed nature of the circuit do add additional dangers in treacherous conditions. And the best part is we have to be positive. We have to look forward. There is a race coming up in a few days. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the Dutch Grand Prix is back by the seaside town of Zandvoort. And natives will be totally restless. You know, they have even changed the speed signs there from 30 to 33 because Max's number is 33. So all of Denmark is, all of Netherlands is in a rapture of love for Max Verstappen, as they should be. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how PO were you when they canceled the race?
I was devastated. I mean, it was so anticlimactic. If they had said, you know what, we'll reschedule the race later on in the year, I could have seen that. But of course, the Ardennes Forest, as we get closer to fall and winter, is wet all the time. I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm not a paid salary guy from the FIA, but I think the FIA with the years we have in Formula One, I'm really surprised this turned out to be such a strange ending to the Belgian Grand Prix weekend. But it is what it is, and let's hope that Holland is going to provide some extra excitement.
Well, you know, like Bernie used to say, sometimes dictators are good, and in times, turbulent times like these, I have to agree with him. Because, you know, when Sergio Perez, when he crashed on his way to the grid, and the race was delayed, and there was this discussion between, I think it was Jonathan Wheatley from Red Bull and Mike Massey, sort of a debate why he should not be allowed to restart, why he should be. They should take into consideration circumstances of the day or of the event and make some, you know, do some quick thinking and keep everybody in the game. Let's not throw technicalities and rule book at each other, even before the start of the race. I mean, you know, if the guy has crashed, if he can repair the car, again, because of the circumstances, let him race. That should not be broadcast worldwide, that the director of, technical director does not know this basic rule that he has to check. And, but I'm glad they do all these broadcasts and put it on everybody to hear so we know what's going on. But the way it was handled was not what you would expect from Formula One. But this is not the first time they have surprised us. Now, sir, here are some comments from the drivers. Lewis Hamilton, of course, Monaco resident, and as always, champion of the common man, he said, and I quote, "There was no moment when we would have been able to race. Money talks. The fans probably should get their money back," end quote. Now, obviously, you are saying that he's getting a lot of heat from all corners. What I've heard from people, you know, is I do respect his right to say what he wants to say. Some people made a comment, you know, hey, you have all the money, why don't you return? But these are very complex things, you know. This Bernie also said, hey, they ran the race for two laps, so their contract, the organizer is obligated to pay. And what the details are, we don't know, obviously. But you know, these Formula One, I don't think will go to a, I don't think they give a net 30 invoice to organizers, especially Formula One. This was all started by Bernie Ecclestone. I think they get their money up front, both from TV and organizers. They can't take a risk on not getting $30-35 million from our track and then not have that money paid because it rained out. So again, I don't know all the nitty gritty details, but one has to keep in mind, Mr. Rogers, Formula One has been going on for 71 years. And you know how much both of us love Formula One, like millions of fans around the world. And I've been following night and day, almost for 50 years now. This is the first time it has happened. Very disappointing, maybe super disappointing. It's not something that happens on a regular basis or every season. So we just have to, you know, suck it up and go to the seaside town, Sanford, coming up this weekend and enjoy better racing. Now, we move to your man, Alonso, who said, and I quote, "I'm P11. I'm the first idiot in a way because I was not allowed to fight for points, but they gave the points. It was an early Christmas because some gifts were given," end quote. Max, "I think the big credit goes to the fans around the track who stayed here the whole day in the rain, wind and cold. They should be the real winners," end quote. And man, I was surprised that most people stayed there for so long. Some were really enjoying a good time there. But Spa is such a beautiful place. It's not like you're spending 4 hours in the Sakhir Desert to watch the great Bahrain Grand Prix. Were you surprised people stayed there so long, sir?
No, because it's a big, great atmosphere. The people who go to Spa are really passionate about Formula One and racing. And not only that, the entry fee for general admission, folks, all those people sitting in the mud, well, that looked like grass, but believe me, it was mud by the end of the day. You're drenched, you're soaked, you're muddy, you're disgusting, you smell. But they pay a pretty hefty fee for just general admission. I mean, in 1998, when I went to Spa, general admission was $350 one day. Yeah, they have no seats. They're welcome to roam around the track and find a nice tree to stand under. But it's you pay a lot of money, and you stick around hoping for a fantastic race that's going to be historical, and you want to tell everybody that you were there because this winner of this Grand Prix earned everybody's respect. Well, that didn't happen. You had fake racing, fake laps. Everything was fake except for the water coming down from the sky. These people paid a lot of money to be there. And as in 2005, I got a refund from Michelin. And I believe everybody at this Grand Prix should get a refund as well.
Well, at least the race was historical. And, you know, I've been to three historical races now. The 2005 U.S. Grand Prix, and I'm very proud of this. Fernando is faster than you. I was at that race, and also the Multi 2-1. So it will be something to look back, you know, in a few decades. So we'll see how it goes. Okay, now, Carlos Sainz Jr. said, and I quote, "The conditions were just not enough to drive a Formula One car. So I don't agree with the comments people make at home that today's Formula One drivers are not taking any risk," end quote. Ricciardo said, and I quote, "Crazy, crazy day, crazy circumstances. It's lucky that we don't get these situations very often, but it is what it is." We move on to Norris, who said, "I don't think it was a race deserving of points because it wasn't a race at the end of the day," end quote. And finally, Mr. Gasly, Monsieur Pierre Gasly said, and I quote, "I think that the problem was that if anyone spun in the first lap, there was absolutely no visibility and there would have been a big exit," end of quote. But sir, history was made from winning the shortest ever race in the land he was born in. Max now goes to the land and sand he is from. The package he has and performance he has put in so far this season, the 2021 Formula One World Championship should have his name at the top after the sunset in Yas Marina. With half points awarded for the Belgian Grand Prix, he is now within striking distance of regaining the championship lead if he wins his home Grand Prix on Sunday at Zandvoort. Now, Mr. Rogers, if he wins the race, or wherever he finished, but if he retakes the lead in the championship, I was wondering if we're going to have scenes in Amsterdam and Haarlem like we do when some Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup and people go crazy in Montreal and Toronto or whatever they do. Do you think we're going to have scenes like that?
Yes, I think the red light district will become like an open house party, and everything that they sell in the red light district for that evening will be free of charge.
Oh boy, free of charge. Very good. Okay, sir. But man, I'll tell you, this is a very, very, I'm very excited about what we're going to discuss here. George Russell, even it was wet all weekend at Spa, his performance in Quali and podium on Sunday should dry the ink on his contract to race for Mercedes AMG F1 team. According to Toto, decision has been made. Let's hope cat is out of the bag by Monza. Third man on the podium, Lewis and his team were not too excited. Gee, what a surprise about a two-lap demo race which cut his championship lead. With cancellation, now here is the important point for these two youths. With cancellation of Japanese Grand Prix and who knows if races in South America will go on, it is very critical going forward that these two combatants do not make mistakes. Fourth and fifth were two ex-Red Bull drivers, Danny Ric ahead of Sebastian Vettel. Next two positions were occupied by two karting rivals and friends, but now singing "We Don't Talk Anymore." And both are one-hit wonders, Pierre Gasly over fellow Francais Esteban Ocon. Now, one thing good, both red cars were in the points. Leclerc 8th and Carlito 10th and Nicholas Latifi in 9th meant both Williams in the money. So there was some positive news here. Man, I've been thinking this. Max Verstappen should really win this championship because of his talent, his package, and Honda engine is up to speed and reliable. Do you think he will take the title from Lewis?
Well, the biggest problem with Red Bull, both engines from Hungary were scrapped because of the Bottas incident. And you got to give it to Bottas as a team player. I mean, he kicked ass. He was bowling 300 that day. To take out the drivers, well, Max went on to continue, but to take out the Red Bulls as he did and to make sure the engines were damaged, it was brilliant, 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 brilliant. So Red Bull really comes out on top in Belgium because the motor was raced very, very little. It might give him a little bit of help, but the biggest problem is Max is on his third motor, his final motor. So now they're thinking, they know they'll have to take a motor. Where and when do you take that grid penalty? Which sucks, as far as I'm concerned, but it is the rules, and that's the way it is. So Mercedes are actually giggling and wringing their hands because they know they have the advantage of not being penalized for more motor changes. So Mercedes has got an advantage, and Red Bull needs reliability more than ever, 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 ever.
And how much is the grid penalty for an engine change?
I believe it's 5 places.
Well, you know, if it's 5 or 10 places, he'll find a way to come at least second in case Lewis wins, which most probably will happen if he's not winning. But if they send him to the back of the grid, then he probably will still come on the podium, I think. So they can minimize this loss, I think. With you know, the guy is very quick, the car is very quick, and a pissed off Max Verstappen is going to go like a rocket, I'm convinced. And so we'll have to see how it works out. But racing at Zandvoort in front of a massive orange army, Lewis will be singing and feeling sand in my shoes. The first corner there, called Tarzan, has seen some wild action in the past, even in Formula One, most notably between Mario Andretti and James Hunt. I believe it was in 77. And at that time, in the tangle, Hunt was not able to continue, Mario was. Hunt said famously that in Formula One, you don't pass on the outside. And obviously, R. Nige did not get this memo when he raced in Mexico. So I'm very pumped up, sir, very excited, really looking forward to it. The Sunday is gone. It's lost in the fog of Massey Mania, so I'm not going to worry about it. But I'm really, really looking forward to it. Do you remember the last Dutch Grand Prix in 1985?
I do.
I remember that race very well, watching live, and of course 5-6 in the morning in Cali. And that was, I believe, Niki Lauda's final Grand Prix win. So I've been to the track a couple of times. I was there a few years ago for a Formula 3 and DTM race. It was very, very hot, man. I did not even know that Netherlands could get so hot. But the track is beautiful. I really, really like the, I mean, it's been chopped up from what it used to be in the 70s, but it's still a very, very good track. Okay, sir, let's do a little recap of the quali. Lando Norris was numero uno in Q1 and Q2 and was looking good for his first ever pole in Formula 1. Shortly after the start of Q3, Seb told his team they should red flag the session, and what he said later on, I won't repeat that. Even Norris complained of aquaplaning, but then he had a big bang coming out of Eau Rouge, which according to Martin Brundle was more due to overcorrection. Best part is Lando was able to get out of his McLaren on his own. Q3, pole number 9 for Max, first for Red Bull at Spa in 10 years, and in their 50th race with their GP2 engine. Seb in 5th on the grid is Aston Martin's best start since the 1959 British Grand Prix at Aintree, when a Italian-British guy, Roy Salvadori, started 2nd. But man of Q3 was Russell on front row. First front row start for Williams since Monza 2017, when another whippersnapper by the name of Lance Stroll did the business. Even Jos Capito, team principal and CEO at Williams, said, "If Toto has not made his decision yet, this performance will do it." I say George in a Williams out-qualifying Lewis in a Mercedes in the rain of all the places at Spa sends a very strong signal that this is a special talent and deserve a place in a top team. Sounds familiar, Mr. Roger?
Oh, Wilbur! Be careful for what you wish for.
Oh, Wilbur!
The memories!
For what you wish for.
Yes. This performance will even get the attention of Sir Hamilton, and I will not be surprised if in a season or two, race fans around the world are asking, Car 44, where are you?
There's a holdup in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout troop short a child, Khrushchev still red out of wild.
Car 54, where are you?
Lewis had Ricciardo alongside him on second row. The Honey Badger was singing the blues behind his teammate till Lando crashed. Now, misery loves company. We all know that, and hopefully, and most likely all of us have experienced that. Both the solid number twos, Perez and Bottas, were on row four, but Bottas had some excess baggage in the form of 5-second penalty for his Hungarian Rhapsody when both Red Bull drivers were left standing when the music stopped. And Bottas in a Mercedes, car number 77, you know, he had to start from 7th row, which really calls for a Ronnie moment. Mr. Wolf, tear down his contract. Mr. Wolf, tear down his contract. And you know, here is your man's favorite word, karma. All this happened on Bottas's birthday. In other words, George not only has Bottas's cake, but pretty soon will have his car also. And you know, talking of Bottas, I normally don't do that, but I sent an email to one of my contacts in Formula One, who is normally aware of what's happening before it's confirmed. And I asked him about the Bottas situation, and his response was Sauber Alfa Romeo, and which has been rumored before, reported before, and it also was stated today on a different podcast by another well-known journalist. So, and you know, Frederick Vasseur used to own, may still own the ART racing team, and it was that team that Bottas drove for when he won his GP3, so there's a connection there. When Lewis won the GP2, that was with ART also. And interestingly, Toto and Frederick Vasseur have a history going back many, many years. Apparently, I read somewhere they even shared a house in England at one time. What you know helps a lot. But Bottas is a very good talent. He's a championship-winning driver. He won the Formula Renault, which used to be a very strong championship, against Daniel Ricciardo. And his only crime is the same crime committed by Eddie Irvine and Rubinho, the teammate. So I feel sorry for him. But I would like to see Bottas stay in Formula One racing. I won't say the same thing for some other senior citizens, but everybody gets their chance and opportunity, and then, you know, Father Time catches up. Would you like to see Bottas stay in Formula One, Senor?
Yeah, he'll stay in Formula One. Like you said, I heard the same innuendos and rumors that it's done deal. Bottas goes to Alfa Romeo to replace Kimi Räikkönen, who will announce his retirement at Monza, and Russell will go to the top team.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and you know, championship positions is interesting. Lewis Hamilton is now leading with 202.5 points. Max is second, 199.5, so he's almost there. Lando Norris is still in third ahead of Bottas, and that is really, really bad for Bottas. Lando has 113 and Bottas 108. Sergio Perez completes the top five with 104. In the constructors, Mercedes leads 310.5 over Red Bull, 303.5. McLaren third, 169. Ferrari fourth, 165.5. And Alpine, artist previously known as Renault, 80. And sir, as you know, if the race is run for less than 75% of the distance, half points are awarded. and I saw a news item of all the, I think it's been six races that were, did not go the 75% distance and half points awarded. So let me get my notes on that so we can share it with our listeners. Would you like to hear that, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely.
I think this is fun stuff. Okay, so apart from, it says about Belgium, you know what is interesting? And this was also, everybody was trying to be Effley Bailey of Formula One. The rule for race to be considered a race, it has to be two laps. And in Formula One, you know, when a red flag is given, you go back one lap. That's how Senna lost the 1984 Monaco Grand Prix. So people were saying, hey, if it's one lap, which is now officially one lap out of 44, no points should be given. So anyway, they were given and we move on. Others were 2009 Malaysian Grand Prix. They ran 31 laps of 56. Then we had the famous 1991 Australian Grand Prix. Only 14 laps were run out of 81. And this is the race where Senna crashed into Martin Brundle. And there's a very famous footage of that, and I'm sure you've seen that. 1984, this 31 laps in Monaco out of 76 in your Francais man, Alain Prost was the winner after Jackie X threw the red flag just as Senna had passed him. But these things happen. 1975, a race I remember very well, Austrian Grand Prix, when Vittorio Brambilla, also known as Monza Gorilla, won the race in a march. And he had completed 29 laps of 54. And in excitement, he threw his arms in the air in the rain and then crashed. So much for celebrating. And then we had the first race. This race also I remember very well, and it's gone in history because it was stopped 20 laps out of 75. And this is the 75 Spanish Grand Prix at the beautiful Montjuic Park circuit, street circuit. And I'm sure you remember there was an accident which killed a few people involving Ralf Stommelen. And it was in this race that Lella Lombardi, I think she finished sixth and got half a point, and to this day remains the only lady driver to score a point or half a point in her case in Formula One. So there's something always happening in the world of motor racing, past, present, and future. What else would you like to talk about, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I'm thirsty. I think you're thirsty. And we've been chatting a lot. So why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Bonjour, je suis Olivier Panis et vous m'écoutez, l'article est pour F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And rain is falling at Spa, and we stay in Spa for some more action. Formula 3, race 1. Lorenzo Colombo from Italy dominated the race. Red Bull's Texan Cowboy Jack Crawford was second. He is performing to Dr. Marco's very high standards, which is very hard to do. And hopefully this kid can make it to Formula 1. Well, you know, Carroll Shelby was from Texas, so he made it to Formula 1, so I guess he'll be the second one. Late in the race, David Schumacher got on the Yuki Tsunoda program, saying on his team radio, "Everybody shut up." So that was interesting. Race 2 was won by Australian Jack Doohan, son of Mick Doohan. David Schumacher was second, an American kid from Florida. Logan Sargeant was third. And Doohan went on to win the final race, which is actually the race on Sunday. The first two races were on Saturday. The Sunday's race is what they call the feature race. And Jack Doohan won that also. In the championship, Dennis Hauger, who is part of the Red Bull Academy from Norway, leads with 158 points. Doohan second on 133, and third is Mercedes Junior from Denmark, Frederik Vesti, on 101 points. MotoGP from Silverstone, your homeboy Fabio Quartararo was the winner for Yamaha. Aleix Espargaró gave Aprilia first podium in modern era by finishing third. So that was pretty impressive. Six different makes in the top six. And interestingly, Mr. Rogers, there are two French riders in the top three in the championship standings. Quartararo leading over Spain's Johan Mir in second, with Johan Zarco third. So that is very, very good. Now, I don't know if you have seen this. Did you see the big crash involving several cars in qualifying in Formula W?
No, I did not. I only was able to read about it. It was pretty critical.
Well, check it out on the... good thing is all the ladies are fine. But check it out on YouTube. It was very scary with cars flying in the air. It really looked like the poor Dan Weldon's crash at Vegas when cars were flying in the air. And this Finnish lady, Emma Kimi Leinen, W Series Championship leader, Jamie Chadwick, and Alice Powell to score a very impressive victory in the wet at Spa. And I believe that this series will also race at COTA, Circuit of the Americas. I think that is for sure. So we'll see what happens. But obviously, unfortunately, because of the COVID, there is no chance to do any interviews. And I won't even get a media pass, which I've been advised. But, you know, we tried. Okay, sir, some very sad news that really made me very, very sad. You know, Robin Miller, the very famous American journalist, a complete authority on IndyCar racing and history, he passed away. He's been suffering from cancer. And he likes, you know, somebody wrote that he was more well-known than several drivers, which is very true. I first met him many years. Actually, I met him during the San Jose Grand Prix in California many years ago. He was very nice and friendly to me and always remains so. Last time I met him was about a year ago at St. Petersburg. And over the years, you know, anytime I needed some information, he was very, very cooperative. And even this year, earlier in the year, I needed some information. So I was trying to reach somebody and he responded to me right away and saying, let this person know we are friends. And I did, and I got a response right away. So I will miss him. He was not in the best of health in the last few weeks of his life. And let me just say, and you know, the interesting thing is he used to come out with a lot of scoop, and he was on the money almost all the time. And his one of the biggest stories he broke, and I could not believe when I read that, is when IRL was in existence, he broke a report that Tony George has been kicked out of the boardroom. And the boardroom was basically his mostly family members. And then immediately, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway denied that. And Robin stuck by his story. And sure enough, about a week or 10 days later, this sugar-coated the situation, but he was booted out. So he knew a lot of inside information. And this is what A.J. Foyt said about him. And I quote, "We got to be really good friends over the years because we respected each other. Like a lot of people, I didn't like what Robin wrote at first. But after a while, I realized that 99% of what he wrote was true. I don't know where in the hell he finds out all the crap he finds. He had a knack for figuring out or guessing it. And when he guessed it, he usually guessed it right." End of quote. So, sir, I just wanted to mention his passing and say a few words and rest in peace and our, you know, condolences to his family and friends.
Yes, I was struck when he passed at 71, still a pretty young age in this day and age. So that I thought that was very, very sad. But he was loved by everybody in his community, and he made such a big contribution to IndyCar. He will be remembered and missed for sure. He was a great, great motorsports rider.
Okay, Mr. Rogers, moving on, we come to our Arthur Anderson segment where we play the numbers game. George and Lando, race number 50. This was their 50th race, if it can be called a race, at Spa. For Ricciardo, it was race number 200. Nando gets one more year at Alpine, and Checo gets another wonderful opportunity to celebrate Cinco de Mayo with Max. Have you seen the time difference in qualifying between Max and Perez?
Yes.
It's amazing, man. It just really shows how quick Max is, that even with the driver who they brought in thinking he'll do better than Gasly, their own homegrown talent, and Albon, he's still about close to half a second slower. But that's, I think, the best anybody can do against Max. Okay, sir, this I had very, very mixed feelings, man. No more Parabolica. The Parabolica Curve of the Autodromo Nazionale Monza, my all-time favorite track, will be named Michele Alboreto, after Michele Alboreto. The decision was taken by Angelo Stichi Damiani, who's a very well-known gentleman in Italy. He is president of the Automobile Club of Italy. And they got the approval of the Sports Council, and this will be made official on September 11th, which is a Saturday, during the weekend of the Heineken Grand Prix d'Italia. The last corner of the Temple of Speed will therefore be called Curva Alboreto, exactly 20 years after the death of, he was from Milan, which occurred in 2001, driving an Audi sports car at the racetrack in Germany, Lausitzring. His wife, Nadia, or widow, Nadia, will be there. And you know, interestingly, I've never been able to verify this, but I read many years ago that his mother, Michele Alboreto's mother, was from Libya. So one day, you know, I will talk to some Italian journalists and verify this. Very interesting. And I was a huge fan of Michele Alboreto. I don't know if you remember the 1985 German Grand Prix at Nürburgring. In the closing stages that year, he fought for the championship against Prost, but Prost was right behind him, and with the few laps to go, Alboreto's car started smoking. And in those days, we used to have done blowed up quite a while, and I will never forget watching this race and smoke coming out. But somehow the spaghetti that day was cooked all good, and he was able to carry on and win the race. So the first time I don't hear Parabolica as the cars go into that corner, it's going to hit me hard, but it's named after somebody that I respect a lot and sadly got killed in a testing accident. So it's okay. Okay, sir, this is of much interest to me. Miami Grand Prix update. Former Abu Dhabi and Russian Grand Prix boss Richard Cregan has been appointed Chief Executive Officer of the Miami Grand Prix. Now, he was previously involved with Toyota when they were in Formula One, but I'm not sure if he was also flying to Cologne every day from England in his private plane. Like, do you remember his technical box? Mike Gascoigne was doing that?
I remember.
Yes. But the reason this was of interest to me, it's Miami Grand Prix. I'm very happy about it. But it was his son who was racing in GP3 at the time. He made a comment after, you remember Carmen Jordá, the Spanish girl?
Yep.
He made this comment after she was announced as a development driver for Lotus team. I believe the team was Lotus. And his comment was, Carmen Jordá cannot develop a roll of film, let alone a Formula One car. So that's his opinion. But I do want to say something about Senora Carmen. I once saw her at Monza in the GP2, GP3 hospitality area. And I can solemnly testify she was like summer in Sahara Desert. Muy caliente. And on that hot note, we thank everybody for listening. But wait, there's more. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, yes, sir. This is very, very interesting. By the way, did you watch the segment Sky Sports did on Mick Schumacher driving Michael Schumacher's 1991 Jordan, in which he made his Grand Prix debut?
Indeed. Very, very cool. That was exciting. Yeah, Vettel was there to help him out, telling him how to shift gears. It's all manual gearbox. Yeah. And apparently, Karim Chandouk also took a drive in the car. It was very, very impressive. Very, very impressive.
It was very tastefully done. I enjoyed it very, very much. Okay, sir, it was 30 years ago at Spa that a German hotel owner checked his young charge in a youth hostel as the team did not make reservation for the driver making his Formula One debut with them. Then the driver and his manager, Herr Weber, got on a hot grill and started singing today's tune.
not in love anymore.
Finally, famous last words. Today they come from Hombre who dethroned the Red Baron, the all-knowing, soothsaying Karnak of car racing, the one and only Senor, Machismo Senor Fernando Alonso. He describes Spa-Francorchamps in this eloquent manner. A lap at Spa is like 20 laps on a different circuit in terms of fun and adrenaline. End of course. So that's a very impressive way of describing Spa. To that, I would like to add my own two pesetas, with all due respect to him and to you, Mr. Rogers, and say I think he also said a lap against Lewis is like 20 laps against Fisico and Yarno. And with that, Sling and Arrow, thank you for listening to the show. May we have a dry, very exciting, very intense, and very safe Dutch treat on Sunday. Bye, kids.